Welcome, everybody, to the Week 13 edition of the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast, usually the Thursday flagship show, but this week with Thanksgiving, we've changed the schedule up a little bit and changed the content structure up a little bit. I'm Drew Dinkmeyer. I'm here with Ricky Sanders. We're recording our normal Saturday premium DFS podcast that goes behind the paywall at Daily Roto, but this week, there's no paywall at Daily Roto. The content is up there. It's free. You just have to sign up for the free trial. Use the promo code STUFFING, and you can check that out over on Daily Roto's Twitter feed, on our Go Premium pages, anywhere there, you'll be able to find that. You get a free one-week trial. It's only for new users who haven't tested this out before. You get that free trial. You're able to get to 7 days. It will renew upon expiration, but you can cancel at any time, and that will give you access to all of the projections for all of our sports, basketball, football, college football is going on. NHL, everything that we do, you'll have access to for a 7 day trial if you'd like. But because we're doing it this way, because of the different schedule, what we usually do, Ricky, on the Saturday premium podcast is we go by position. I know the flagship show is usually kind of a game by game breakdown. We will defer to our usual premium podcast and kind of break things down by position. If you like what you hear, feel free to give us a try and check us out with all the content and the projections that go along with this podcast. But Ricky, how are you feeling about week 13? Obviously, it's a little bit of a condensed research week as everybody focused early on the Thanksgiving slate. How do you feel about this main slate?
Yeah, I'm starting to like it as it goes on. And by the way, I'm happy that I personally skipped that other podcast with game by game, because at least position by position lets me stay sane and I can kind of think about my pool as we go on. Game by game, all of a sudden I'm just, you know, adding players to a pool and I lose my mind by the end of that podcast. So I think, you know, me, if I were listening to this pod, this would be the way that I would prefer it broken down. But I think there's definitely games to prioritize this week. But as always, I like the 2 and 3% owned receivers from games that people will not be on, and we'll get to that as we go on. But I think, you know, from a game stack perspective, we got 3 to 4 games to focus on and kind of go from there.
Yeah, I think this will be an interesting week, and this is probably one of the, you know, we start getting into December, and I think you have to start paying attention to weather. So we usually don't kind of open up with weather concerns around games, but I think there are enough weather, you know, notes to at least open up the slate with them, because I think they'll impact kind of the way you're thinking of the slate holistically, and they do impact our projections a little bit. So let me start there before we go into the positions. In terms of wind concerns for this slate, the Tampa Bay-Jacksonville game looks like it's going to have sustained winds in the upper teens. So we've slightly lowered the expected yards per attempt for both passing games there. There's also, you know, decent chance of precipitation that game. So it could be kind of a more difficult environment just with higher winds and maybe rain as well. Temperatures will be fine there. In terms of the other wind game that we're looking at, Oakland and Kansas City has sustained winds in the upper teens as well. And, you know, no real precipitation chance there, but temperatures in the high 30s, low 40s. So we've docked 0.1 yards per attempt there, as well as just historically, once you get over sustained winds of 15 to 20 miles an hour, you start to see more substantial decreases in efficiency and expected efficiency. So slight docks there. In terms of precipitation and rain, San Francisco and Baltimore is going to be just an ugly, ugly game. There's supposed to be at least an inch of rain expected in that game, 100% chance of precipitation throughout the game window early on. So what we've done for games that, you know, generally rain we don't worry about, but really extreme rain conditions, we do think, you know, the field gets sloppy, teams tend to run a little bit more, the pace of play slows down. And we certainly saw that earlier this year with that San Francisco-Washington game, where it was just like a flooded field. And they actually had a running clock in that game going, which really substantially impacted the total plays. We've dropped the plays for San Francisco and Baltimore, each one play in terms of expectation. And we shift the rushing percentage, both in terms of play calling and in terms of touchdowns, by about a point and a half as well for both teams. So So we're expecting more rushing opportunities there. Same thing for the Giants in Green Bay, where there's a 97% chance of precipitation throughout the game window. Temperatures in the low 30s there. It looks like it's going to be ugly there. Now, there's still that doesn't mean you should avoid passing attacks from those games entirely, but we have accounted for it some in our projections by similarly in the New York Giants-Green Bay game, shifting play calling percentages from baseline and shifting rushing TD percentages from baseline about 1 to 1.5 percentage points. So just to give everybody some transparency into how we look through the weather situation, those are the primary games that had any impact on the projections. Nothing else has. And there's still players from that game, those games you can play, but yep. It does kind of impact the way that you're thinking about things. So let's start it at the quarterback position, and it starts with two guys from two of those four games, with Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes holding the top projection at the quarterback position. This is no surprise. They outproject the rest of the quarterbacks by a few points. And in terms of, you know, the two of them separating them, we have Mahomes for a slightly higher projection overall. The Chiefs have a slightly higher implied total. The Chiefs have an implied total that's into the 30s. Baltimore's in the mid-20s. And as a result, you know, Mahomes just projects a little bit better between the two. I think largely this slate is going to be one where you're going to potentially look to get a little bit more salary relief at the quarterback position. You certainly could play these guys in cash games. I think if I was to play one above the other, I don't have a strong lean on it. I think the weather conditions for Lamar aren't really a big deal. Like, if they're going to run the ball more, that's actually good for Lamar in terms of fantasy value. So I don't have a strong preference between the two. I'd say maybe a very slight preference to Mahomes between the two. But really, I'm more likely to pay down at quarterback, but I will use both of these guys in GPPs.
Completely agree. I think the weather conditions just kind of increase what you need from rushing from Lamar Jackson. If you're not going to get a whole lot passing, you really need Lamar Jackson to be like an RB1 if you think that the weather conditions are going to really strongly affect his passing ability. But obviously he has the opportunity to do so, and Patrick Mahomes has such a strong arm that when it comes to the wind, I don't think that's such a gigantic concern. Obviously, if he gets over 20 miles an hour, that can affect anyone, but knowing how strong his arm is, I still think he can gun it through the wind, and you can feel pretty safe playing a healthy amount of him. After them, though, I know this is the guy that's giving you trouble this week, so I'm kind of going to open up the floor to you because I know I like a few of these other guys, starting with Kyler Murray, but Carson Wentz is a guy who's been extremely disappointing, and now it looks like potentially losing his, you know, kind of guy, you know, his safety valve in Zach Ertz. I mean, he's been downgraded to questionable, and they brought up a tight end from the practice squad, which generally, if you look at that as a correlation, does not speak, you know, great for his prospects. That leaves him with Alshon Jeffrey, Nelson Aguilar, who's caught 57% of his targets this week, Dallas Goedert, I think that's what we decided that that's how you pronounce his name, but it is against a Miami team that we have wanted to target QBs against, and there have been multiple tournament winners against this defense. So, Drew, where do you stand on Carson Wentz? Because I think he's kind of important this week.
Well, I think as we've talked, you know, over the course of the season, the way that I look at these things is, you know, you do your best in terms of the projections to discount all the factors that you're considering. Our projections currently have Zach Ertz in, so they will change if Zach Ertz is officially ruled out. But what we've done is we've downgraded Ertz's target share a little bit and shifted some of that to Alshon Jeffrey. We've downgraded the team yards per attempt a little bit in anticipation. There will be a further downgrade, and certainly, you know, with quarterbacks, as we've always kind of alluded to, the team total is really what drives a lot of the projection. And Philadelphia has the second highest team total on the slate at, you know, over 27 points. The other thing that I'd note is we talked about a lot of games that, you know, have some weather concerns that are some of the preeminent games that people would like to go to this week, right? Tampa Bay, Jacksonville, Oakland, Kansas City, to some extent, Green Bay and the Giants, and to some extent, Baltimore, San Francisco. Those games are teams with higher implied totals on the slate. So they're games that people want to attack. This Miami, you know, Philadelphia game in Miami, 80 degrees, no wind, no rain, like perfect conditions. So I think you throw this in there and you say, okay, Vegas or the market, I should say, I always default to saying Vegas, but really the market has picked through these lines and come up with, you know, Philadelphia with a 27 implied total. And then you look at the ownership projections and you see Carson Wentz on FanDuel is projected for like 5% ownership. And on DraftKings, he's projected trying to pull that up now. He's projected for like 5% ownership there as well. And now, to me, any concerns that I have about playing Carson Wentz, I'm starting to stack the odds in my favor with the fact that I've discounted the projection as much as I can. The market has picked over Philly's, you know, total as a whole and come to the conclusion that Philly's going likely to score a lot of points. And the DFS market is not reacted to that in any way because of how awful Carson Wentz has been. So, you know, while yes, he might be losing Zach Ertz, he's also getting back Nelson Agholor and Alshon Jeffrey. It's not the Mac Hollins, Jordan Matthews, Greg Ward Jr. receiving core that he was dealing with last week. So I think if this projected ownership holds, and he's going to be sub, you know, sub 6-7%. I think he's a really good play in tournaments. I think from a cash game perspective, I'm uneasy about playing him. But a lot of that uneasiness is due to, you know, things that I usually try to downplay in my own personal play, like, you know, what I see when I watch. And obviously what I've seen when I've watched for Carson Wentz is the Eagles offense has really struggled without Lane Johnson. They haven't been protecting him as well. And without a really strong receiving core, he's held on to the ball too long and they haven't been able to move the ball effectively. I think this basically all comes down to how confident are you in the market evaluating Philly's total correctly. If you think the market is really good and they've got Philly's total, I think you should be confident playing Carson Wentz in cash games. I think if you're concerned that, you know, the market is not good, you can certainly move around, and there's some options that are priced somewhat similarly. You just have to kind of move lineup construction around. My early lean is that I'm more likely to play Carson than not, I think, from a cash game perspective. I don't play a ton of cash games. I mostly just play head-to-heads these days. But that's kind of my early lean on Carson. And from a GPP perspective, whenever you're unsure about something, unsure about a projection, unsure about a player's likelihood of success, the way that I look at it is I look to the ownership projections. And I think the ownership projections just in general have a much higher R squared than our actual projections. It's much easier to project ownership than it is to project players' actual performance. And so if I'm unsure on the player's actual performance, I'll lean on the ownership projection. In this case, for Carson Wentz, it's quite low.
Yeah, I think you pretty much covered it there. So let's go to the next tier. And the reason that we like Wentz even more is because some of these pivots like Jameis Winston and Kyler Murray, they're more expensive. And you add in elements working against Jameis Winston, and all of a sudden you quickly have two things working against Jameis Winston, which, Drew, one of them would be the elements, and the other one would be Jameis Winston working against Jameis Winston. So, I mean, it's a good matchup, don't get me wrong. All of a sudden this Jacksonville defense has allowed over 300 passing yards. I believe it's in three of their last four games. So they've kind of fallen apart a little bit since Jalen Ramsey left town. And you've got Jameis Winston with the receivers who, you know, can speed up a game and do speed up games. I think last week was the eighth time already this year that one of Edwin's and or Godwin has topped 28 DraftKings points in a week. So yeah, he usually finds a weak spot and he, you know, keeps going to that same player and they absolutely crush. And when you're going to, you know, you see these guys approaching like 200 yards receiving, which they often do, obviously Jameis is on the other side of that one. You just have to, you know, work against the elements here. And I think that's a little bit more of a concern than even usual with Jameis. Kyler Murray, I think it's mostly his health, but I personally like both quarterbacks in this game quite a bit. And I'll get to Goff in a second, but you look at this matchup for Murray, and I mean, this has been a pretty stout passing defense, especially since Jalen Ramsey has gotten there, but they're still 20th in DVOA overall. I think with Ramsey, they're probably quite a bit lower than that. But you get, you know, the multi-dimensional upside of Murray, and I think this week, it's, for me with Murray, a minimum rule of one pass catcher, because I think Christian Kirk has the ability to take the top off the defense. I do worry a little bit that Ramsey has shadowed in back-to-back weeks, and if you're worried about that, I think there's a possibility for, you know, targets to funnel to someone like Larry Fitzgerald, who I don't think is going to be, you know, incredibly highly owned this week either. And I'll just mention Jared Goff and then open it up to you. Jared Goff, has kind of gone the way that Cooper Kupp has gone this year, by the way. I mean, when Cooper Kupp has had big games, those have been successful for Goff. And games that he can't find him, I mean, which is basically the entire month of November, it hasn't been great for him. And there really isn't a better matchup for Kupp. This Arizona team has allowed the most fantasy points out of the slot of any defense. So I do view this as a very prime Jared Goff bounce back spot where you don't have to battle the elements as well.
Yeah, so of that group, I would say the guy that I would most likely, if I was not going to play Carson Wentz in cash, the guy that I would probably most likely pivot to if you weren't going to go all the way up to the top to Mahomes or Jackson, which I think is just kind of tough from a salary perspective this week, for me would be Jameis. I think, you know, Jameis is just, the volume is so strong, and I think the matchup with Jacksonville is so compelling. Tampa Bay has a 25 implied total, so pretty good implied total there as well. And they're just such a huge percentage of their touchdowns are passing oriented that I think Jameis would be the guy that I would go to if I was pivoting off of Wentz. It is a little bit more expensive in our projections. You know, really, they view Wentz and Winston as the same guy. I think Winston has a better floor for cash games just because of the volume of and the skill level of his receiving core. But I do like Kyler in GPPs. I do like Goff in GPPs. I think that's a game stack that you can certainly reference. I think other guys that I would consider from the GPP pool would be Nick Foles, who, you know, in that game, you know, the pass funnel defense of Tampa Bay, one that we've attacked all year. I don't think there's any reason to stop there. I also think Jacoby Brissett is interesting in tournaments, especially on FanDuel, where he's 7,200. You don't worry about competing with the bonuses, which he's kind of unlikely to get there. But he does have that rushing upside. He's coming with no projected ownership. Pairing him is a little bit tougher now without Ebron and without T.Y. Hilton. But that also means that pairing him is pretty cheap, right? Jack Doyle or Zach Pascal would be the two candidates I'd most likely pair him with. And both those guys are pretty affordable. So I think Brissett has some intrigue to him. And then I think on the really cheap side, I think Andy Dalton is really interesting to me as well. You know, Dalton wasn't playing as poorly as maybe Cincinnati evaluated him earlier in the season when he was relieved of his duties. It was just a situation where there weren't, you know, there wasn't a good offensive line. You know, he's without AJ Green. The Jets are a team that you have to pass on because their rush defense has been so good. And I think Dalton is so cheap that he could be a part of GPPs. I know some people were talking early in the week about Dalton in cash because, you know, you do want to spend up on Christian McCaffrey and whatnot. I don't think it's necessary. And I think on a slate where you've got, you know, for like $1,000 more quarterbacks with implied totals that are like 8 points more, you should weight that more heavily. But I think Dalton is certainly in the conversation for tournaments. One guy that I will say that I will probably be very light on, very, very light on, and actually I probably won't have any of, is Aaron Rodgers. And I think it's a great situation playing the Giants, but there is projected ownership there. I do love his receiver that I'm going to use a lot of, which is Davante Adams. But I don't see a path to playing Aaron Rodgers that I can double stack him because I don't have enough confidence in any of the other pieces that I'd use alongside. And so if he's going to be double digit owned, I feel like I can garner most of the good performance by just playing Adams. And so that's going to be kind of my approach. I know he has a pretty good touchdown projection and the Giants are a defense that you want to attack on the whole. But I think the conditions being, you know, so rain oriented or snow oriented, I think could limit, you know, some of the willingness to pass. And I think just in general, if he's going to be owned, which I think he is, I'm just going to sit that one out.
I'm with you there. I think that makes a lot of sense. We've seen it in weeks past, by the way, just to, you know, for these new users, that you can take a quarterback who doesn't lead the week in scoring if they get you into their wide receivers, you know, owner or exposure, that wins a slate. Like a DJ Chark for 100 and multiple touchdowns, if he's the top scoring receiver, you'd prefer to play Foles than a guy who spreads it out sort of thing. And I think that's what Drew's talking about here.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, and I look, I've been burnt on this. I did this with Rodgers the week that he went nuts against Oakland. And he threw a bunch of touchdowns, and I kind of missed out on that. So I don't have a great track record at evaluating Rodgers on the whole. But I think, you know, if he was projected for sub five, I'd be feeling differently about this. But 2x that projection and one of the top, you know, five or six quarterback ownership projections, I'm just going to cut him out of my pool.
Yeah, I think I agree with that.
All right, let's move over to the running back position where Christian McCaffrey really dominates the projections once again. Favorable matchup at home against Washington. They're double-digit point favorites here. Washington ranks 21st in rush defense DVOA. I think there's just a lot of good things, obviously, to like about McCaffrey. The thing that I'll note is the ownership this, you know, the last few weeks, the ownership at this price tag has been more muted, in large part because there's been other expensive options on the slate and just pricing's been tighter on the whole. I think this week pricing is a little bit looser. There's less competition. There's no Michael Thomas. There's no Alvin Kamara. There's no, there wasn't any Julio Jones, but there's no Julio Jones. So I think as a result, I think McCaffrey's going to be very owned. Our ownership projections right now have him in the 20s. I would not be surprised if he was in the 30s or 40s. It wouldn't surprise me. And I think that number is actually really important to how you want to play this slate. Because for me, there's no circumstance that I think you stone fade McCaffrey. No circumstance that you do that whatsoever. But I think there are circumstances if he's in the 40s or 50s that you would consider an underweight position on him. I think conversely, if he was in the 20s, I think that's a position I'd probably take an overweight on. So I'm really going to hone in on that and try to figure out where I want to go with this. The reason I think it's viable to take an underweight position on McCaffrey is simply because at that price tag, you're going to need some cheap guys to go to really go off to be winning large field GPPs. And that price tag is just so high that a game against Washington, a game that the Washington's offense isn't going to push Carolina most likely, you could certainly see a situation where Carolina gets from ahead early. Maybe they get a defensive touchdown or something like that. And McCaffrey's workload is just managed because he's carried such a heavy workload, or the receiving game volume is down because their passing volume is down overall. And they get, you know, some looks for Reggie Bonifon or, you know, Jordan Scarlett or whatever. And it ends up being a McCaffrey game where he has like 130 total yards and one touchdown, which is great, but probably not winning the slate to more kind of higher-end balanced teams. I do think this slate has fewer higher-end guys to compete with McCaffrey, so he doesn't need quite as high of a performance as he usually does to be in the winning lineups. But I think the ownership here is really the key for me. In cash games, he's a lock. You absolutely build through McCaffrey in cash games. But I think in GPPs, there's at least a decision to be made. The one knock I have against all of this is the fact that you got to have faith in the other running back options to be underweight on McCaffrey. And I don't know that I do. I don't love this slate for running back. So, Ricky, how are you treating McCaffrey?
Yeah, I was going to say, everything you're saying is going against everything I believe in when it comes to the running back pool. It's just load up on the guys who you feel good about their touches and try and, you know, go with the volatility of the receiver and the tight end positions because there's less opportunity there. The thing with McCaffrey is, even if he gets you 130 yards and a touchdown, there could be, you know, 8 catches involved with that. So he is just a tough guy for me to want to be under the field on. When you look at, like, some of our alternatives, I think, what am I looking at? I'm on standard right now. So let's go to 90th. Let's look at the ceilings here. I think I'm on fantasy draft scoring, which is basically DraftKings scoring. Leonard Fournette against Tampa. I hate running backs against Tampa. I've been fading them most of the year. You've got Saquon Barkley against Green Bay in a game that should be a slop fest. You got Joe Mixon per dollar, you know, in a matchup against the Jets, who are typically a funnel to the pass type defense. So there's not even like a strong case to be made that if you're not playing McCaffrey, go elsewhere. So for me, just with how consistent he has been and with how many cheap receivers there are this week that our model likes, to me, it's just an obvious over the field McCaffrey sort of week, but I understand what you're saying.
So, all right. So what are you thinking of, like, as a targeted percentage for McCaffrey in your MME exposure?
60.
Okay. So if I told, does that number change if I told you he was going to be 50% owned or if I told you he was going to be 20% owned?
I think if you told me he was going to be 20% owned, I might lock him.
Okay. Okay. So, but at 50%, you'd still want to be overweight.
Correct.
Okay. So that's where I struggle with this. I think because his ownership right now is projected in the 20s, I'm more likely to be up around the numbers that you're talking about than an underweight. I'm just trying to think through at what numbers would I want an underweight. And I guess the other component of this is, you know, what does McCaffrey really need to do, like, in terms of competing with the other flex options on the slate? Like, who's going to really challenge McCaffrey? Right. We currently have him projected 8 points ahead of everybody else on FanDuel. So yeah. if McCaffrey gets you 20 to 25 on FanDuel, even if it's an underwhelming performance relative to his price tag, how likely is that still to be enough? And that's kind of what I'm rolling through. And maybe I'll ask Mike if he's run Sims or not. But I think McCaffrey is a very, very important decision point in your MMA exposure this week. And I do think just because of the game environment, there are more paths to them managing his workload than in recent weeks, just because Washington's offense has just really, really struggled. And going into Carolina, if they can't keep it up, you could just see like, you could just see a path where, you know, instead of McCaffrey getting his usual 25, he's getting like 18 to 20. And
right.
In terms of touches and in terms of fantasy points. So I think it's something, and I was talking FanDuel there. Obviously on DraftKings it would be higher because of the full PPR and the bonuses and whatnot. But yeah, I think it's really interesting. After McCaffrey, Fournette and Barkley are the next tier of running backs. They're ahead of Derrick Henry. For those of you who are on like the Derrick Henry calendar narratives that are going around, that he's like better in, you know, November and December.
Oh God.
I don't know what to do with that. Like, I guess maybe, but Derrick Henry's not going to project when he's getting like one third of the targets of other backs at his level. He's just not going to project median wise above them. So Fournette and Barkley are the next two guys. A lot of volume for Fournette. I mean, the one guy who can really contend with Christian McCaffrey's volume this season is Fournette, who's averaging just under 24 touches per game this season. He's seen at least six targets in 9 of 11 games. Just an incredible workload. But, Ricky, I know you hate playing running backs against Tampa, so what are you doing here?
Well, I think he's involved enough in the passing game that I'm still okay with him. It's still likely an underweight position, and because I do worry about Tampa, I think I'll be doing a lot of pairing him with Nick Foles, thinking that Tampa is so good at stopping the run. I know if DJ Chark or Westbrook, you know, they get a penalty in the end zone, Fournette likely gets a look, and then from 1 yard out, you know, it's kind of a random thing. I still think it's an under position, but also adding him to Nick Foles' stacks, kind of knowing that if we're going to get a Fournette kind of ceiling game in this sort of game environment, he's probably going to have to catch a ton of passes.
So he's only projected for like 20% ownership. So when you say under position, you think you're going to have like 10-15% of Fournette? He's only 15 on DraftKings projected ownership.
10 still sounds about right.
Okay, so I'm pretty confident that I'm going to have more Fournette than the field. There's a couple reasons why. The first reason why is I have to give ownership somewhere. and some of the other backs that are commanding ownership projection right now are inferior projection to Leonard Fournette, and I think for good reason. So guys that are projected in terms of ownership on DraftKings ahead of Leonard Fournette are Jonathan Williams, Miles Sanders, Le'Veon Bell, and then around him are Jamal Williams, Derrick Henry, Aaron Jones. And most of those guys that are projecting kind of around him have at least some sort of timeshare concerns, right? Like, Jonathan Williams obviously operated as like very clearly the lead dog last week, but that was also without Jordan Wilkins. Like, Jordan Wilkins was an emergency active, and I just don't know what they're going to do this week with that situation. If you look at like the how he's been used, it's been very clear cut in terms of like the guy who's getting all the looks. That's actually a projection that I might adjust a little bit more in his favor, because we might be a little bit too optimistic on Wilkins making an impact. But the other guys, you know, Jamal Williams, Aaron Jones, they're obviously in a timeshare. Le'Veon Bell has certainly been getting a lot of opportunities, but he has been losing snap share to Bilal Powell and Ty Montgomery have been playing. And then Derrick Henry is not really involved in the passing game. So for me, I'm probably going to end up with Fournette and hope that basically I'm going to say, okay, he's probably going to get like 40 to 70 rushing yards, but my hope is that he's going to get 40 to 70 receiving yards, and he's going to get 5 to 8 catches, and then he can just fall into the end zone at some point.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the hope. I think if he was going to be like 30% owned, I'd feel much more confident about being underweight the field on Fournette. But I think this initial ownership projection is a little too low. And I feel the same way about Saquon as well. Saquon is currently projected for sub 10% ownership. Obviously he's really struggled since coming back from, you know, the ankle injury, hasn't been very efficient. Green Bay is a defense that has struggled against the run this year, though, quite a bit. They rank 28th in Football Outsiders rush defense DVOA. the volume without Evan Engram and Golden Tate out is certainly available in the passing game as well. And I think the conditions might make it so that they give Barkley the ball a little bit more as well, because it sounds like it's going to be very, very wet. I'm interested in Saquon quite a bit at this projected ownership of around 10%. I think he'll be one of my higher overweights relative to the field at the running back position.
Completely agree. I mean, a guy getting all the touches who has been disappointing, and or the field is talking themselves into some random reason why not to be on them, has been my prime spot all year long. You know, I don't like taking the chances on the guys that, you know, 12 touches are basically the ceiling. You want workhorse backs, and Green Bay has just been gashed multiple times this year. Barkley, 20.4 touches per game, seen at least 5 targets in every game but one. A workhorse back in that scenario where the weather may play into them having to be more run heavy as well. Saquon, I don't think you're going to get an argument from me here. There's an argument to be had. I think he's just a guy that you want a lot of, especially if this ownership projection is anywhere near correct. I mean, I personally, looking at, you know, the difference between him and Fournette, I want more of him than I want Fournette.
Okay, so we agree there in terms of Saquon. Derrick Henry, what are you doing with him? I know he was a play that you were really high on last week. I'm at the point where, like, I was playing Henry 3 weeks ago when he was $2,000 cheaper and the ownership was cut in half. And I was excited about playing him then. I don't know, like, I can't do it at $2,000 more expensive, or $3,000, and probably $2,000 more expensive, and 2x the ownership. So I think he obviously is the type of guy, because of his game-breaking ability to generate big runs that can break slates, and his touchdown appeal. Like, you know, he gets any of the looks inside the five. They just keep giving him opportunities. He even had a touchdown called back last week on a screenplay. But this price tag is really, really high. And for a guy who's not super involved in the passing game, it's difficult for me to justify. And so I think Derrick Henry is going to be one of my larger underweights relative to the field.
Yeah, I mean, the reason that I was so heavy on him last week was that matchup against Jacksonville, who's allowed more yards per carry than any other defense, and any defense that struggles to tackle was clearly going to have an issue with Derrick Henry, who is just a tank. We saw, you know, the long run from him last week, but we also saw him breaking tackles. This matchup, still favorable, nowhere near as favorable, and the price tag, like you mentioned, keeps going up on him. I mean, I was comfortable at 6,900, 7,600 in a more difficult matchup is starting to get to the point where I'm feeling uneasy. So I agree with you. I don't think this is anywhere near, you know, last week's matchup where I feel great about him. Now he's kind of just another guy to me.
Okay. Le'Veon Bell and Josh Jacobs are two other kind of, you know, workhorse type backs. Jacobs has been a little bit more game situation dependent of late, as Jalen Richard has really been picking up playing time on kind of passing down roles. And this game is obviously one where, you know, going into Kansas City, they project as big underdogs. He isn't projecting for much ownership. This was sort of the case last week, and I had a decent bit of him, and it was a disaster. I guess this should come full circle with talking about Fournette, and you were just talking about attacking the Jaguars defense, so we can talk about Ronald Jones here as well. But last week, Ricky, I made a very, very costly mistake. I'm still at odds with whether it was the right decision or not, and I feel like I'm facing it again this week. And I'm trying not to let last week's results. But I made a group in my optimizer runs of max one of Leonard Fournette and Derrick Henry. And my thought process behind it was that for both of these backs to really smash, because they were pretty expensive, for both of these backs to really smash, it needs a very unique game script, right? It needs either them each to break off a big play, or one of them to, in this game only had a total in the low 40s, right? So it wasn't projected to be like a shootout that it kind of ended up being. Or one of them just kind of dominates and their team gets way ahead and then the other gets dump offs, which is what ended up happening basically. And then Fournette got some scores on top of that. But that's only one side of that game that can go that way, right? Because if Jacksonville dominated, then, you know, Henry wouldn't be in that role. So I made this group last week, largely because of the price tags as well. I think the mistake that I could have made on that was that the running back pool was so thin last week that I shouldn't have been naturally capping out or grouping out other combinations of good plays. This week, Ronald Jones is much cheaper. And so the fatal mistake was basically I had a lineup that had a Jacksonville, Tennessee game stack with Ryan Tannehill, AJ Brown, and Fournette that had a spot at running back that was utilized by Josh Jacobs, and Jacobs was $500 more than Henry last week. And the difference between Jacobs and Henry's production was just the difference between me winning $800 and me winning $1 million. So it was a very costly mistake. I'm debating the rule again this week. I know you're going to like Ronald Jones because you've been attacking that Jaguars defense. Do you think you can play Ronald Jones and Leonard Fournette in the same lineup this week?
Yes, if for only the same reason as last week, that you run into that similar game flow where one team is trailing. I'm not sure it matters which team in this matchup. Last week it mattered, but Ronald Jones was a guy who, if you remember in preseason, they were saying he was catching the ball funny, which was a hilarious report, that he like couldn't get his hands right. But apparently that's a thing of the past, that because you know he has at least flashed some upside as a passing down kind of back. I think Ogunbowale, you know, probably is the guy who would see more work in that scenario. But if Tampa Bay gets ahead, you could have a scenario in which Fournette is catching the dump offs once again. I know you're talking FanDuel, though, where the dump offs aren't quite as important. So on FanDuel, I'm sorry, you're kind of on your own here. On DraftKings, I think it's a firm yes. On FanDuel, okay. I think you know the format better than I do.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit trickier on FanDuel. I think what does help is the fact that, you know, Ronald Jones is like 2K cheaper than Henry was last week. And so you just have less of a need to kind of get up there. But going back to Josh Jacobs, he was integral in that destruction for me. I think Josh Jacobs this week, you know, Kansas City's allowed the most fantasy points to opposing running backs this week. I think he still can be used in those Kansas City stacks. But yes, it's probably going to require a specific game style. And it's going to be one that Oakland has to play well. So I don't feel super excited about that, but I think it's very possible. The good news is it doesn't seem like people are going to play him. And given Oakland's success running the ball this year, given Kansas City's struggles against it, I think he's viable in GPPs. Le'Veon Bell is the guy who's projecting very similarly and has much more of a passing game role, but is coming with much more projected ownership. And I get it. Like Cincinnati, every running back in the league has run on Cincinnati this year. Even backup running backs have run on Cincinnati this year. The Bengals have allowed, I think it's the fifth most or sixth most fantasy points per game to the opposing running back position this year. The Jets offense looks much better. Le'Veon Bell could have had a monstrous day last week if they had just allowed him to get a carry from the 1 yard line. Instead, they scored all their other touchdowns kind of passing in that direction. The thing that gets me, though, is that the ownership is here. And so and the price tag is back up. It's back up like almost $1,000 more expensive than it was last week. So, you know, I think he's a fine play. I like him a little bit more on FanDuel than I do on DraftKings just because his price didn't move up as aggressively on FanDuel. And I'm going to play him. I'm just not excited about having a really strong position on this when the field is certainly going to be on it as well.
Yeah, he's a guy that I'm going to just let run. I don't really have a strong position on him either way. I do like Josh Jacobs quite a bit, by the way. Against this Kansas City defense, there's the upside of a long run. And remember, on DraftKings, you get the 100-yard bonus. I think all he needs is the 100-yard bonus and a touchdown to get you where you need to be. In the first matchup, he averaged 8 yards per carry. I think that was on the backs of one long run. But I also think, if you think about like how Oakland would be scheming to win this game, it would be keeping the ball out of Mahomes' hands. So at least early in the game, while they can, I would expect Josh Jacobs to be busy, you know, rushing the football. So we have talked about it in games past. I know there's been times where you've taken Derrick Henry out of game stacks, then he has a long run there. We kind of forget about the long run equity in some of these games that, you know, could set off the entire game stack. So for that reason, I'm leaving Josh Jacobs kind of like you alluded to, and I'm just fine with him overall.
Okay. So the clear value running back on this slate is Miles Sanders. And we talked about how nobody's going to, you know, ownership projections suggest nobody's playing Carson Wentz. The ownership projections do suggest people are going to play Miles Sanders. And I think Miles Sanders is a really, really strong play. He's played about 85% of the snaps. Jordan Howard was ruled out before we started recording today. 85% of the snaps the last 2 weeks, 52% market share of carries, and 10 to 11% market share of receptions. The Dolphins' run defense is 29th in DVOA. They allow the fourth most fantasy points per game to opposing running backs. Philly has a 27 implied total. Tons of great reasons to play Miles Sanders. Ownership is going to be there. I think the early ownership projections, like around the teens to 20%, do not really faze me. So I will still be playing Miles Sanders at pretty strong positions, is my guess. I think it's interesting in the fact that there seems to be some leverage on this slate with Philadelphia's offense as a whole, because people seem a little bit scared of it. And it's such a good spot, and they have the second highest implied total on the slate, and it's perfect conditions in Miami, that, you know, I could see doing something like at least one Philadelphia offensive player in all your lineups, especially if Ertz is ruled out. Now, you could say, yeah, look what happened when Alshon Jeffrey and Aguilar were ruled out last week and what happened to that offense. And the offense has some risk of just completely cratering. And maybe that's true. Certainly it is a road matchup. But Miami has been so vulnerable defensively all year long that I think you could consider something like that. I don't think I'm going to do that, but I think most Philadelphia players on this slate, I am probably going to be overweight on, and that includes Miles Sanders.
Yeah, hard not to like them. Then just rounding out the position, I mean, Darrell Williams and LeSean McCoy, we're not exactly sure how that's going to break down without Damian Williams, but if one does emerge as the lead back, there is certainly going to be value to them in tournaments on this offense, especially if they're playing from ahead. You'll get to see, you know, who dominates carries there. I think it's McCoy, but not 100% sure. And just wanted to, you know, finish it out by asking you, Drew, how you felt about Kenyon Drake, because Chase Edmonds is back, and now we've got ourselves a unclear situation, which is not my favorite thing, but I think Drake is talented enough that we at least have to think about him.
So when you were talking about the Kyler Murray stacks, I thought you were going to mention Kenyon Drake, because he's had six receptions in each of the last two games. And yes, Chase Edmonds is back, but I think there's certainly, you know, Kenyon Drake's played great. There's certainly a reason that they would continue to give Kenyon Drake opportunities. David Johnson just appears well down the depth chart. I don't know how they feel about Edmonds relative to Drake, but here's the thing. People aren't going to play him. You know, he's projected for 3% ownership right now. So I'm going to play Kenyon Drake. I feel pretty good about that. I don't know if he'd make like a main GPP lineup, but he's certainly in the mix, and he certainly would be included in Kyler stacks for me as well. Other guys, we talked about Ronald Jones a little bit. Joe Mixon, I think, is a good tournament play as well. Like, this is a guy who, when his team lost by 35, he got 32 touches against the Ravens. Obviously, people don't like running against the Jets, but I think there's certainly value to just volume there. And then some other guys that I think are interesting. I think Aaron Jones has the kind of profile that I like for tournaments, in terms of he generally gets the goal line work. He is on a team that I think will play from ahead in crummy conditions that I think he can really run effectively in. And it's a really good matchup, but ownership is going to be there, and it's a timeshare. So I will probably play a little bit of Aaron Jones in GPPs, but I'll probably be underweight on him, which disappoints me, because in the few teams that I have that made it in the Best Ball Championship, I have a lot of Aaron Jones, so I'm kind of conflicted there. Other guy that does not project super well in our projections, but I like as well, is Melvin Gordon. I think, you know, the Chargers, I think they can play from ahead in this game in Denver. Might be without Von Miller, so I think it's a decent matchup. They're coming off the bye for the Chargers, or the extended break, I should say. And so I think it's a decent spot for the Chargers to kind of get right. And it feels like the thing that the Chargers do also, which is a stupid narrative, but it just feels like, you know, as soon as the Chargers get behind enough in the standings that winning a few games won't substantially impact their playoff odds, it seems like that's what they usually do. So I feel like Melvin Gordon is an interesting GPP play as well, on both sides.
Yeah, I don't really have too much.
Are you gonna play any Todd Gurley if you're playing these Rams Arizona stacks?
Man, Todd Gurley just has not been an exciting player this year at all. I don't think he's got the same explosiveness that he had last year. But if they get towards the goal line, you could probably fall into a pair of touchdowns. I'm going to play a little, going to cap exposure if it gets too high. I think 5% is about what I'm comfortable with at this point.
Okay. Let's take it over to wide receiver, where Tyreek Hill and Devontae Adams are the top projected targets at the wide receiver position. We talked about how we don't have Michael Thomas on the slate, no Julio. Tyreek is projecting well ahead of Devontae Adams, and then Devontae Adams is well ahead of like Cooper Kupp, Odell Beckham, Chris Godwin, Mike Evans, DJ Shark, that type of group. In terms of, you know, the pricing on Tyreek Hill, he's very expensive. And so I think he's going to be a guy that the ownership is going to be relatively under control. This goes a little bit hand in hand, in my opinion, with the ownership of Christian McCaffrey, where if Christian McCaffrey gets mega, mega owned, then nobody's playing Tyreek Hill. So I think he's interesting. He's certainly obviously always interesting in Mahomes stacks. I've talked about this before, but just the way he gets his points, it's a difficult stack for me because when he goes off, usually he consumes so much of the production because it's a big play. It's not like a slow grind down the field that it's harder to hit with double stacks with Mahomes, but Mahomes is so expensive that you need to hit with double stacks with him. And his other options are so expensive. So I think if I was playing Tyreek Hill in a double stack, I'd be more likely to do it with a running back or with Sammy Watkins, someone that's cheaper than I would Kelce, just because I think that eats up so much salary. And you really need those guys to like catch two touchdowns each almost. Devontae Adams is the guy, though, that of the higher priced guys is going to soak up all the ownership. He's severely underpriced on DraftKings. And I think because he's so underpriced on DraftKings, he's going to have kind of carryover ownership on FanDuel as well. He's not as severely underpriced there, but 7,000 on DraftKings is way too cheap for a guy that, you know, easily can be projected for a 30%+ market share of targets. And the Giants, just the secondary has been awful. Yes, the conditions are going to be kind of crummy, but a lot of the passing game volume that they get to Adams is like through screens and like shorter kind of controlled attempts. I think that'll all still be there. I think Adams is one of the best values on the slate at the wide receiver position. I'm going to play him. I think you play him in cash games on DraftKings if you can. I'm going to play a decent bit of him, but with any 20%+ projected owned wide receiver, you know, I'm unlikely to have big positions on them.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on the Tyreek Hill thing, is that I've noticed our model will do exactly what you're talking about by accident, in that if you set like a minimum ownership group between like Tyreek Hill, Kelce, Watkins in the past, you know, whoever you're comfortable with, you're unlikely to get a lot of the multiple expensive guys, especially if you take positions on running backs like I do. So I don't think you have to like overthink it. The tools will mostly give you Tyreek Hill with someone other than Kelce if you set it that way. You'll probably get a few, but it'll just do automatically what you're thinking through there.
Yeah. Okay. Christian Kirk, Sammy Watkins. There's like first let's talk about this kind of upper level tier where I think you're going to get more exposure in tournaments than cash games. But Cooper Kupp, Odell Beckham, Chris Godwin, Mike Evans. I like Godwin and Evans more than Beckham, but so does the field. So you're going to get a lot more ownership on the Tampa Bay guys. You know, I don't know what to do with the Tampa Bay guys at this point other than to keep playing them because one of them seems to win the slate every single week. So I'm just going to keep doing it, especially no Jalen Ramsey for the Jaguars. Their defense has struggled in recent weeks. So I'm just going to keep firing on them. Odell is going to come with really low ownership and a lot of volume projection. I will probably end up managing my exposure to him, so I'm not getting really out of control on him because I think the opto, especially if you put ownership constraints, is going to funnel you a decent bit of Odell. Like if you do total ownership on your lineups, because he's projecting for 3% ownership and he's projecting as, you know, our fifth highest wide receiver overall. So he's a guy that I probably will manage my overall exposure to, but I think he's a fine GPP play. The target share in Cleveland has just gotten so condensed in recent weeks between him and Landry. Yep. It's basically those two guys and Hunt, and then they're not using the tight end. They're not using the third wide receiver. There's a lot to like in Odell as a contrarian tournament play.
Yeah, I completely agree. And the one guy who you kind of mentioned in that group and didn't talk a ton about was Cooper Kupp, who is a guy that I think I'm taking a strong position on this week. It has been a horrible month in terms of the Rams passing game. You know, Goff didn't throw a touchdown in the entire month, but again, the defense that allows the most fantasy points per game to slot receivers, one of the games where you don't have to worry about the elements this week. Like, even if you don't feel great about Goff's upside because you've watched him recently, we're still talking about a team with a 25-plus implied total in a game with 62-plus plays for both teams. It's the only game on the slate that is projected to be that fast-paced on both sides. I really like Cooper Kupp this week.
All right, in terms of the value wide receivers, you've got a couple guys. You've got Christian Kirk, Sammy Watkins, Alshon Jeffrey, Zach Pascal, that all project as pretty decent values. In a lot of these situations, it's guys who have emerged as kind of number one wide receiver. Oh, you could throw Sterling Shepard in there as well. He's another guy that certainly fits that mix after we bumped up his market share of targets without Tate and Ingram around. In terms of this group, who are the guys that you like the best, Ricky? If you were to consider like cash game plays and tournament plays from the Kupp, Watkins, Jeffrey, Kirk, you could include like Tyler Boyd, I guess, in that group as well, and Zach Pascal. They're all kind of these mid-tier price tags, and they all kind of like funnel in and out of optimals depending on the site that you're playing on.
Well, you already kind of talked about the minimum one potential rule on Philadelphia. If there's no Zach Ertz, I just don't really see a way that Alshon Jeffrey is not heavily targeted in this game. I worry about the hands of Nelson Agholor, so that's not a guy that I really would, you know, want to have a ton of exposure to. I think Alshon Jeffrey would emerge as the clear top option in the passing game. There'd probably be plenty of volume for Goddard as well. But if we think, you know, Wentz is going to have a productive week, I think Alshon Jeffrey, who already has a 22.6% target market share baseline, I think the ownership would obviously go up on him, 6.7%. But you're talking cash games, so I don't really care about the ownership. And I think by the time he was boosted for Ertz not being there, it would just be hard to make a strong case against Jeffrey. So I think that's the guy who has the solidified floor. I mean, Zach Pascal, even without T.Y. Hilton, has averaged just 6.5 targets per game. I think you're getting more targets for most of the guys that you mentioned in there. So Pascal is definitely a guy I'm fine letting go. He's definitely a guy I would consider pairing with Jacoby Brissett, but I'm not sure he's the primary cash game guy if you're only going to get that sort of volume.
Yeah, I think the guys that I would feel best about in cash games are probably Shepard, Kirk, and Jeffrey. I think those guys can all operate as their team's clear-cut number one receiving option. I think the guy that I probably feel best about for tournaments of that group, based on the current ownership right now, is probably Jeffrey as well. I think he's got, you know, multiple touchdown upside. Sammy's going to be owned, I guess. I like Leonie and I have been joking that Sammy Watkins is like 50% responsible for our Fantasy Pros wide receiver rankings that have struggled this year, because we're always really high on Sammy. Him and Brandon Cooks just totally sunk us at different points in the season, other than just that one opening week for Sammy. But I think he's very viable and obviously gets you exposure to one of the best passing offenses in the league and one of the highest implied totals on the slate. I think Tyler Boyd has a really big volume role opportunity and a pass funnel defense against the Jets that certainly is one that you can attack. So I think he's kind of on the periphery in the mix there. Pascal is really cheap on FanDuel, so I think you see a little bit more of him on FanDuel, if I remember correctly, than on DraftKings. But I think, you know, he's certainly in the mix there too. And then you've got also Demaryius Thomas, who's a cheap option that you can mix in. He's questionable, so you just need to check back on the injury stats there. And Nelson Agholor really cheap on FanDuel, kind of makes things work there. I think those guys are all kind of in the mix. You could also extend out to like D.D. Westbrook. D.J. Shark, I think, is you know, a fine upside play, but going to be owned. There's a lot of wide receivers that project really closely this week. So it's one of these weeks where I think after like the top tier of guys, we have like 20 wide receivers that are projecting within like 2 or 3 points. And what that means is just generally that, you know, if you use shuffle or use volatility at all, you're going to get naturally a little bit more spread at the wide receiver position than you might be accustomed to, simply because there's not a lot of separation between the projections. And I think that makes a lot of sense. And so for me, that is always a good week to lean on ownership projections as a way to potentially take advantage. I know like on FanDuel, Keenan Allen is going to be projected for sub 4% ownership. He's relatively affordable. He's under 7K over there. Like that seems like a good tournament play, you know. Like, so I think there's going to be opportunities where you can get these sub 5% owned guys at reasonable price tags that you can take advantage of in GPPs. You had mentioned that. So who are some of the guys that you're thinking about this week?
The Carolina guys, for sure. DJ Moore and Curtis Samuel. I mean, we.
I got bad news for you, bud. You're not getting DJ Moore at low ownership. According to the ownership projections.
I was just about to make that comment that Curtis Samuel appears to be the money guy there. If you're looking for the 2% owned, because DJ Moore, yeah, I mean, he's kind of gone crazy as of late. But Curtis Samuel is still a guy that can stretch the field, and remember, this is a condensed offense. I mean, I know Christian McCaffrey and DJ Moore see their healthy share, but we've made the point that they basically throw to four guys, and Curtis Samuel is one of them, and they're, you know, 10-point home favorites. So you're probably going to need the production, you know, mostly early in the game. But even if it's like a 10-point game throughout, I don't think they're going to abandon the pass by any means. Deontay Johnson's another interesting one. I kind of have interest in the Pittsburgh guys once again. I mean, when Delvin Hodges came in last week, that's when they started throwing down the field, and that's what you're looking for with tournament receivers, is you just need someone to catch a long one. So I think having exposure to both makes sense. Personally, I always run wide receivers on 100 shuffle. It's my heaviest shuffle position. So you saying that like your wide receiver pool is going to be deeper than normal, like I always seem to have an extremely deep wide receiver pool running it like that. So I'm kind of excited for this week because, I mean, it just fits my strategy anyways.
All right. Well, there you have it. I think in terms of other wide receiver options, I think we covered most of them. Cortland Sutton is another guy that I think, you know, high target share, relatively modest ownership that you can look to. Any of those Bengals secondary receivers or salary relief guys, we've seen Auden Tate and Alec Erickson have some bigger target shares at different points. Chris Conley for Jacksonville, just because of how he's used down the field. And then Devontae Parker, I think, is interesting on those Miami-Philadelphia bring-back type stacks if you're doing any of those. Let's talk through the tight end position, where Travis Kelce is our top projected tight end by a pretty wide margin on this slate. In terms of cash games, there's so many cheap tight ends that kind of funnel into the optimals that, at least on DraftKings, that you don't get a lot of Kelce, but you get a ton of Kelce on FanDuel. And I think that makes sense. Like the touchdown equity for Kelce is really high on a week where Kansas City has this huge implied total. You've got George Kittle playing in, you know, murky conditions against a good Baltimore defense, and Kittle battling that, you know, foot injury or ankle injury that he was able to play so effectively through. Kelce is just really the dominant tight end at the top of the position.
Yeah, what really is there to be said negatively about Kelce? You kind of alluded to, if you're playing Kelce, I think, you know, Tyreek Hill doesn't become as much of a priority because A, it's tough to fit them, and B, you know, it's tough for them to be that expensive and everyone hit their ceiling in the same sort of stack construction. But Oakland, I mean, fifth against tight end so far in terms of fantasy points allowed. So I think it's pretty clear skies ahead other than the actual weather for Travis Kelce. The next in line options, George Kittle, Hunter Henry, Darren Waller. I couldn't believe that report that supposedly Kittle fractured something in his foot and he came back pretty quickly, but he looked pretty healthy to me playing last week. So I'm completely fine, you know, just going full steam ahead on him, Hunter Henry, Darren Waller. Do you have a preference in this tier? Because there's so many cheap tight ends this week, you don't really have to take a strong stand on any of them. But if you wanted to, I'm thinking, looking at these ownerships, that Kittle would be the guy to do it.
Yeah, I think, you know, you can make some of these decisions based on correlation just in general. Like Kittle, if you're playing Lamar teams, certainly makes sense as the primary bring back. Waller on some of those Chief stacks certainly would make sense. I think Hunter Henry is really interesting. He's projected with the lowest ownership of the group. You won't have any conditions to be concerned about with rain or wind. And he's a guy that can kind of get there on volume alone. But yeah, the cheap guys really do dominate the slate quite a bit. And so, especially if you get Ertz ruled out, you'll get Dallas Goedert in that mix as well. But, you know, cheaper tight ends that, you know, have growing market shares. You've got Noah Font, who's gotten a ton of action with the quarterback change to Brandon Allen. Now we'll see if it's Drew Lock or Brandon Allen. That could change things and make it a little bit more fragile. But he's relatively cheap. Jack Doyle, obviously no Eric Ebron and no T.Y. Hilton. So Doyle steps into a more prominent receiving role. Mo Alie-Cox is also questionable. We've assumed him in as well. But you could see more target volume funnel to Doyle. And then, you know, Tyler Higbee with Gerald Everett ruled out, yep, steps into the primary tight end situation. And Higbee's really cheap on DraftKings. He's not as cheap on FanDuel, so it's not as great of a play on FanDuel. But on DraftKings, he's 2,500, and I think he's just a really, really strong play. I think it's actually a week that on DraftKings you can consider those two tight end builds for cash games because they're so cheap. They allow you to fit in kind of all the other skill players that you want.
What about for tournaments? I was just about to ask you that. What do you think about the two tight end build?
I think it's viable in tournaments. I think I would kind of limit my overall exposure to any one tight end. So that will naturally limit some of those two tight end builds that I get, but I wouldn't uncheck it. I never do for like a flex consideration on DraftKings, and I think it's very viable on this slate. I think the lack of running back value makes it so that it's a pretty viable way to approach the slate because there's so many of them.
Yeah, I'm certainly fine with it. I mean, Tyler Higbee against the Arizona team that seems to give up the tight end one performance every single week, and now there's some condensing with him being the only guy makes a lot of sense. Dallas Goedert, I'm wondering if the ownership is going to get like crazy out of hand if Ertz is ruled out.
I think it would.
Even if it does, it's hard to like talk yourself off him. Just would let it run. Then some other cheap tight ends to consider: Jonnu Smith, with Delanie Walker placed on IR, so you officially won't have to deal with him again this year. And Nick Boyle, who isn't really a high floor sort of player, but he's near minimum price. And they do go to a tight end heavy approach in the red zone, Drew, where a lot of their touchdown looks have been at the position. So you kind of just got to fall into one if you're playing Boyle.
All right, so that's it for the tight end position. Let's go to defense and special teams. Carolina and Philadelphia top the raw projections on the slate, and they're both at price tags that you can kind of get to on FanDuel. On DraftKings, it's a little bit tougher to get all the way up to those teams at 3,600 and 3,800. So you get a lot of the Cleveland Browns. Their defense really played well against Pittsburgh last time out. Obviously, it's a road game here, so it's a little bit different. But in terms of the defenses on this slate that are sub 3K, it's harder to justify anybody but the Browns. There's not as many good defenses to contend with. There's Kansas City at home. I guess there's Tampa Bay at 2,900, which is not super exciting. There's just not a lot of cheap defenses on the slate. So I think you're going to see a lot of ownership around the Cleveland Browns, which is, it's scary anytime a defense gets really loaded up on ownership. The early ownership projections don't have it being really lopsided, so that's interesting to me. But like a good reminder was Thursday on the Thanksgiving slate, where the Bears defense was like 50, 60% owned in GPPs. And, it's easy for defenses to fail,
Yeah.
or harder for defenses to separate themselves from the field because it requires kind of a random event. So just be cognizant of not, getting too much exposure to any one defense. But I think on DraftKings, you'll see a lot of the Browns. On FanDuel, you'll see some Carolina, Philadelphia populate the optimals a little bit more. You'll also see some Ravens on DraftKings as well. And I think the Ravens are pretty interesting. Jimmy Garoppolo has been vulnerable to making mistakes. The game conditions are going to be a little tricky. They're traveling west to east. They're a team that has played from ahead almost all season long, and now they're in a game situation where they might have to play from behind. So I think the Ravens are a very interesting defense as well.
Yeah, and I think the Cardinals and Dolphins are like decent hedge defenses within your MME runs where you could still take a position on someone like Cooper Kupp and like him, but know that Jared Goff has been horrendous over the course of, the last month. And if that trend continues, you could kind of take that position that, okay, I'll have some Cardinals in lineups where I have no Rams just in case scenario. And just in case Carson Wentz is who we thought he has been over the course of the last month, you could take some Miami Dolphins. Not overly excited about either, but I think that's an interesting way to kind of play both sides of the same game.
All right, there you have it. All right, so we'll talk injuries we've mostly mentioned, but instead of stuff that we're like kind of still waiting on, Kyler Murray is questionable. We've assumed him in. Mo Alie-Cox questionable and Paris Campbell questionable. We assume Campbell out and Cox in, so we'll have to revisit that. Anything that comes up that could give us clarity on the KC running back situation would be really helpful. We know Damian Williams is out. We just don't know how the carries are going to split between Darrell Williams and LeSean McCoy, and that honestly will make a big difference in terms of the slate. If one of those guys emerges with a big share of the work, they're going to be very underpriced, and so I'd recommend trying to get some exposure to them in GPPs. New England listed like 40% of their roster is questionable, so we have to sort through that when that comes out. But I think Dorsett is going to play. Sanu is questionable as well. We have to watch there. Demaryius Thomas is questionable, which is only important because he's kind of a decent cheap option on DraftKings. James Conner, I think I saw, got upgraded to questionable. He was doubtful coming in, and Matt Breida is questionable. I think we've got him assumed out. I think our notes say that he's assumed in, but I remember the projections, unless they've been changed, where he was assumed out, but let me just check on that really quickly. Yeah, he's assumed out right now. So that's one that could change things on like the Tevin Coleman projection a little bit, but not a ton. Scotty Miller for Tampa Bay is out, so that opens up a little bit more volume possibility for Godwin and Evans, as long as Perryman doesn't take that. And then Chris Thompson is questionable for Washington. He's assumed in. I don't think there's like slate breaking news outside of Kyler Murray. If Kyler Murray was questionable, that would really change things in terms of how you're targeting that game. But in general, I think we're pretty clean on the injury information. So let's talk about the game stacks and tournament thoughts, Ricky. What are the games that you're focused on this week? And if you could like list in terms of priority of game stacks for you, where do you think you're headed?
I think in terms of priority, Oakland, Kansas City is one. Then Rams, Arizona, and Tampa Bay, Jacksonville are really close. I think there's going to be more ownership in Tampa Bay, Jacksonville, so I'm thinking Rams, Arizona might be my second priority. But let's get Oakland, Kansas City over with, because you just have, you know, Kansas City with a gigantic total here. We talked about the weather conditions, and yet you still have over a 30 implied total for Kansas City. I mean, I think you can leave running backs in stacks with Mahomes for the same reason that Derrick Henry was in stacks with Tannehill last week that won tournaments. Now, I know it's kind of reversed in the sense that Tannehill and his pass catchers were cheap, and it was the running back that was expensive, and this week it's the running backs that are reasonable and the pass catchers and the quarterback that are expensive, but, you know, it's still the only team, or the team that I find likeliest to score 40-plus points. You saw it last week. Tannehill throws for 300-plus. The running back still gets there. I think that's within the range of outcomes. And Oakland, I mean, you could run it back with the pass catchers. You could also run it back with Jacobs, who is in a great spot against one of the worst rushing defenses. I just think there's a ton of upside from both teams, with Oakland potentially playing from behind and then just Kansas City being Kansas City in that one. Beyond that, I mean, I think I like probably Rams, Arizona, maybe slightly more than you do. So Kyler Murray, I want that hamstring to be healthy. If I find out for any reason that he's going to be limited because of it, that will make me feel significantly worse. I'm a bit concerned about Kirk leaving him in stacks with Murray, but for that reason, you know, I'm going to try and prioritize, or at least maybe boost Larry Fitzgerald and maybe even Kenyon Drake in those stacks to try and get more of those. But I really like the Cooper Kupp, Jared Goff stacks. I think I'm going to make sure every single one of my Goff stacks has Cooper Kupp. But obviously, with Goff, you can run a second receiver or pass catcher if he's going to win tournaments. But I really want Cooper Kupp this week.
All right, there you have it. The one other stack that I'll mention is that I think New York Jets and Cincy is viable. I think it's kind of a tough stack just because I don't think it's going to be a super high scoring game, but both teams should pass. So I think, you know, it's viable to do like Dalton Boyd, bring it back with a Jets player, but it's probably not full game stacks. It's more like quarterback, wide receiver, one guy kind of coming back. And then the Miami Philadelphia game, just, you know, I probably will have a lot of stacks of Wentz, but I will also, I'm not going to make a rule that they have to have a Miami player back, but I will key boost to have like Devontae Parker come back in some of those. Obviously, Philadelphia's defense has played very well of late, but they are still vulnerable in the secondary, and Devontae Parker's received such consistent volume. So he's the guy that I would include in kind of boosting situations. Most of the rest of the slate, I am not interested in stacking at all. So it's a pretty condensed slate for me, where I will be playing a few, a large percentage of my share on these game stack situations. But then a bunch of other, like, let's say half of my lineups are not necessarily game stacks, but just single, you know, pure normal kind of quarterback stacks type situations. All right, Ricky, you got anything else for before we take off for week 13 here?
I don't think so. It's a great week for the way that I approach things. There's one running back that stands out. There's a deep wide receiver pool. I think personally, if I'm playing fantasy draft, because I know some people play those, I am not going to include the tight end this week. But I think for other sites, it especially DraftKings, it's a completely viable strategy. Other than that, I think good luck this week.
All right. Well, that'll do it. Thanks for those of you who have put up with kind of our unusual schedule this week on the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. You cannot tune in on Friday for Davis Maddox against the spread picks because it is Saturday. So you can tune in to catch the Gilcast and all the other different content that we have during the course of the week on the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Show. If you have not tried out Daily Roto for this free week, make sure to go on over to Daily Roto, go to the Go Premium, use the promo code STUFFING. You can get a 7-day free trial that gets you access to all of our content, all of our projections across all of the sports that we're maintaining content for. It's a great time of the year. We're thankful for those of you who have given us a shot. Thankful for those of you who are our subscribers. Very, very appreciative of those who give us their business during the course of the season. So best of luck to everybody in week 13, and we will be back again for the flagship pod, for the Daily Roto Premium podcast next week covering week 14.